The 82-game preseason is in the books, and it's finally time for the real season. Don't miss out on any of the NBA playoff action at DraftKings Sportsbook, an official sports betting partner of the NBA. From the play-in tournament through the finals, DraftKings Sportsbook has you covered. Download the DraftKings Sportsbook app and use code SMASH. New customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets instantly. That's code SMASH, only on DraftKings. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER or in West Virginia. Visit 1-800-GAMBLER.net. In New York, call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369. In Connecticut, help is available for problem gambling. Call 888-789-7777 or visit ccpg.org. Please play responsibly. On behalf of Boot Hill Casino and Resort in Kansas, 21 and over, age varies by jurisdiction. Void in Ontario. Bonus bets expire 168 hours after issuance. See dkng.co/bball for eligibility and deposit restrictions, terms, and responsible gaming resources.
Welcome back into another edition of NFL Reacts. I'm Steven Serta of Arrowhead Pride. NFL Reacts is brought to you by DraftKings. DraftKings Sportsbook is an official sports betting partner of the NFL. Download the DraftKings Sportsbook app today and use code SBNNFL for a special offer when you sign up. That's code SBNNFL only at the DraftKings Sportsbook. Day one of the NFL draft is in the books. I think I speak for the entire show when I say we're a little tired, but we're grinding. It's NFL draft season, and so that's what we do. It was a late night last night. It was a crazy night that saw a record-breaking 9 trades in the first round, which is absolutely insane. I think there's a lot of winners on day one of the draft, a lot of losers on day one of the draft that we'll get to. But let me welcome in Kate Magic of DK Nation, as well as Justice Mosqueda of Acme Packing Co. So to start off the show, last night was crazy, right? Like all of the trades, and we were talking about Justice on the live stream, like, you know, all this noise about all these teams trying to get into the top 10 and move up in the draft, and nothing was happening. And then it was like, as soon as we got out of the top 10, it was just chaos. And it all kind of unfolded the way that this whole NFL offseason has unfolded. Like, it's just been absolutely insane.
It's nuts. I mean, did anyone expect AJ Brown was going to get traded halfway through the draft? I mean,
what happened?
Those trades are weird because, you know, you think these guys have to pass physicals, which is why guys aren't drafted on or traded on draft day as much, right? So the fact that, like, this Hollywood Brown thing, which, like, I don't think anyone knew was going to happen, they must have kept that really close to the vest, was in motion to the point that, like, they were picking him up from Vegas to fly him back down to Arizona. Interesting situation there with just, like, the Christian Kirk effect, right? Like, still just rippling throughout the league. The Tennessee Titans reportedly offered A.J. Brown $16 million with incentives. That Yikes. Was never going to get it done. Like, I don't know who had to break the news to the Titans, but, like, Christian Kirk signed that contract. Like, that's the new standard for, like, any contributing wide receiver.
I feel like they were, you know, like, slipping that little piece of paper back and forth in negotiations. And, you know, A.J. Brown said, like, I want $22 million. And the Titans said, best we can do is $10. Like, flat, like, that just seems like that's what their conversation was like. I cannot believe the ripple effect here, but definitely seems like there was more to this. And obviously the situation has been brewing for a while because A.J. Brown didn't slightly even seem surprised. Marquise Brown literally was at the Cardinals draft party, which is nuts. Like, this, it's really fascinating to see some of this stuff. Like, you know, there is more to that behind the scenes, but this is the craziest night one of the draft that I can ever remember.
So I want to stick with the Titans here for a second, because I do think we were all shocked by that. Like, it was kind of, we were expecting, like, if any big wide receiver gets traded, it's Deebo Samuel, right? On night one of the draft. And it seemed like the whole Titans thing had kind of been put to bed and they were just going to keep AJ Brown and try to work out a long-term deal. Now, if I'm AJ Brown, like that $16 million per year with however many incentives, like that's just offensive. And it is part of like Christian Kirk getting that kind of money. Like, I understand AJ Brown's had some minor injuries and stuff, so he hasn't really hit his ceiling yet as an NFL player. But we've seen what he is. Like, we've seen who that dude is and what he's capable of when he is healthy and playing for your team. Like, he is a legitimate number one wide receiver in a way that Christian Kirk just isn't. So I don't blame AJ Brown for that at all. And I was just absolutely shocked. And I don't think it was a good move for the Tennessee Titans. Like, are they just banking on, we're just going to continue this thing with Derrick Henry moving forward and hope that that just keeps winning us football games in a conference where everybody is loading up on offensive weapons and quarterbacks?
I think that's a team that like quietly should be rebuilding, right? Like, I understand you got the one seed in the AFC last year. Everyone kind of like forgets that, right? But you have to start looking at the future. The contracts that they have right now, the reason they couldn't offer AJ Brown even more money, right, is because they don't really have the cap space right now. A lot of the deals that are taking up a lot of the cap space right now for the team, they can't move the salary around for because they don't want to push it into the future, right? Like, what happens if you convert Derrick Henry's salary into a signing bonus and now you have all that dead cap moving forward? What happens if you do that for Ryan Tannehill? What happens if you do that for Bud Dupree, right? Like, those are the questions you have to answer. Taylor Lewan, another one. He's on his either late second or third contract at this point. I kind of am surprised Tennessee didn't take a look at one of these quarterbacks when they were dropping.
They still can. That's the crazy part. We only had one quarterback go off the board in night one, and there's like, imagine if Malik Willis just falls into their laps. Like, I feel like I'm just not sure. There's just so many good landing spots heading into the second round here. You've got Seattle at 40 and 41, but the Titans in the second round, where are they picking? Do they have a second round pick?
Yes, they are picking number 35.
Picking 35.
They probably have to move up from Malik, you'd think, from there. But, I mean, that's a pretty soft landing spot, right? We always talked about how Malik, all the talent in the world, probably needs a year or two to kind of figure it out. I mean, if Ryan Tannehill is there, it's not like he's going to beat Ryan Tannehill out for playing time in the immediate future, at least. So, I just think it would be such a smart move.
And it would really, I think, open things up in terms of, like, just as you mentioned, the rebuilding phase. If you're planning to move on from Ryan Tannehill at any point in the foreseeable future, get one of these rookie quarterbacks under contract and, enjoy those few years you have where you're not going to have to pay a lot of money. He doesn't need to start right away with Ryan Tannehill, but, give him a year of development and then you're kind of good to go from there on.
So I want to focus on the Eagles for a second here, where it feels like they kind of stole the show last night.
Like, sure did. We heard it from the Twitter spaces that we were hosting during the draft. The Eagles fans could not stop talking about the Eagles. They love it.
Yeah, me and Justice were doing a Twitter spaces for SB Nation last night, and it just got completely taken over by Eagles fans who were just everybody celebrating Howie Roseman. Like, we're back on the Eagles train. Jalen Hurts, let's go. And adding AJ Brown and then getting Jordan Davis, which I think was a huge need for them. Like, the Eagles, I think, were big winners on day one of the NFL draft, and they had to give AJ Brown the money, but that's the cost of doing business. And you still have Devontae Smith, who I think is going to be a really good player, and he's on his rookie contract. So it works out for the Eagles in a huge way. And I think they're all of a sudden, like, coming out of day one of the NFL draft, you're like, oh, the Eagles could make some noise in that division now.
Absolutely. I mean, I don't think the Giants are serious. I don't think the Commanders are serious. So if anyone's going to give the Cowboys a push in the East, it's going to be the Eagles. I mean, you're going to figure out if Jalen Hurts is the guy this year too, right? If he can't get it done this year with the tools around him, that's probably when they get clarity on, like, okay, this guy probably isn't our quarterback of the future moving forward. He was a nice rookie contract, a good bridge quarterback between Wentz and whenever we take a big swing at our next guy. But I think that's what the big narrative from this is going to come out on. I know we had fans that were joking Super Bowl after the AJ Brown trade, but they also grabbed Jordan Davis. They jumped the Ravens for Jordan Davis. I mean, when the second move you made in the first round of the draft gets framed as, you know, yeah, you just grabbed the most athletic defensive lineman in the history of the sport, had a pretty good night. You had a pretty good night.
Yeah, I think in regards to the Eagles, we need to address this from a fantasy perspective, because I need to talk about Jalen Hurts. There have been so many questions, obviously, about are the Eagles going to be committed to Jalen Hurts long term? But looking at the immediate, it's really, really hard not to figure that if healthy, Jalen Hurts is a lock for a top five finish in 2022. Am I wrong? Is he a top five quarterback for fantasy football?
I totally agree, because we've seen the last 2 years, just because of his ability to run the football, that he's got high QB1 upside, and that's when he's kind of struggled as a passer. Now he's got the wide receiver that they needed, because that's the big thing that last year they didn't have. They just didn't have a guy who could out physical other corners and win those 50-50 balls. And AJ Brown is 100% that guy, and he's really explosive as a player. So I think it helps the whole offense. And Jalen Hurts, I wouldn't be shocked if he's the number one fantasy quarterback next year.
I would not at all. He ranked number one in rushing yards in 2021, finishes a quarterback one in 10 out of his 15 games last year. And that was a year, like you said, he didn't have, many strong weapons. I think just AJ Brown's presence alone, like you mentioned, the physicality, I think that's such a nice complement to the skill set of Devonta Smith. Give him room to be a technician, and let AJ Brown be the physical guy who can also be explosive. This is just such a nice complement of weapons. We haven't even talked about Dallas Goedert. There's a lot to like about this team for fantasy next year. And I think we have to be pretty stoked for Jalen Hurts just moving forward. I think the commitment that they've made to getting him more weapons, that just tells you everything you need to know. They're giving this dude a shot.
Remember last offseason when this job was open, right? The two jobs, it was the Chargers job was really the last one that the high level candidates really considered. And then once it was just the Texans and the Eagles job, the head coaching candidates just full on pulled out, right? Guys like Daboll, right, just said, okay, I'm just going to go be the offensive coordinator for the Buffalo Bills again. And now you look at this team, they got all the skilled players in the world. Why wouldn't you want this gig, right? I think it's going to be a great spot for Jalen Hurts from a fantasy perspective, just the rushing quarterback stuff, right? We see that these guys get boosted year after year. So you got all the talent in the world. You got some legs. I mean, I'd bet on him being a top five finisher.
Yeah. I'm excited for this Eagles offense. It was just shocking to see last night. But yeah, they've got a lot of upside headed into next season. I want to get back to Marquise Brown and the Ravens shipping him to the Arizona Cardinals, where he actually said this morning that he requested the trade after the season. And to him, it was just, he didn't feel like he was fitting in the Ravens offense and maybe living up to his potential, so he requested the trade. So apparently Lamar Jackson and the Ravens have known about this for quite some time. And focusing on the Ravens here, because we saw what Lamar Jackson tweeted last night after they took a center in the first round, the WTF tweet, which I think that's what it has to do with, not the Hollywood Brown trade. But I am curious what the Ravens are doing here, because I think they had a fantastic night one of the NFL draft. I loved everybody that they came away with, but Lamar Jackson is out here I got Rashad Bateman and Mark Andrews. Give me some more weapons. I need guys to throw to. Last year I finally got hurt because I was doing everything for this offense. I need some help here.
I get that the compensation that they got back for Hollywood Brown basically turned into like the 27th overall pick in terms of like the net return. Hollywood is going to ask for one of these contracts, right? Like if he gets offered $16 million, he's probably going to say no, right? Per year. He's going to get paid. He's in a contract year. I get wanting to move off of Hollywood Brown. You're going to end up saving, you know, millions, tens of millions of dollars per year in cap space. You got the 27th pick. He ran through his contract on the rookie deal. I get it from like the perspective of like Lamar saying like, I want some help, but what are we going to do with the NFL right now? I mean, everyone's going crazy. Everyone needs three wide receivers. There's not three wide receivers per team. It's costing everyone up the butt. Like, what's the solution? I don't know. Like, maybe you just do invest in defense. You do invest in offensive line. And you say, like, look, we'll figure it out with some wide receivers at some point. Like, we'll draft and develop some of these guys in the later rounds.
I mean, I get the frustration, though, for Lamar Jackson. I think the bigger question mark is, like, what is he going to do as he's in this position to be negotiating his next contract? Like, he doesn't really have the time and the luxury to say, like, let's develop some of these later round wide receivers. He needs to produce now. And maybe that's the issue of him being so, it's like this, this back and forth conundrum. Like, yes, he's not in a rush to negotiate his contract because, you know, the market keeps getting reset for quarterbacks and he's going to have an opportunity to make so much money if he's patient. But also if he's not surrounded by the right weapons, he could be missing out on, you know, some money if he doesn't perform up to par.
And we talk about the Christian Kirk contract a lot about how, you know, that has ripple effects, but the one that we haven't really talked about is the Deshaun Watson contract. I mean, him getting fully guaranteed money is a massive deal, right? Like that in isolation would have been huge news if any quarterback signed a fully guaranteed contract for the terms that he agreed to. There was that report that came out that was like NFL owners are like very mad at Cleveland about that fully guaranteed contract to the point where they're like, no, make them pay the Baker Mayfield deal too, then if they want to hose up the entire market. So yeah, I mean, this Lamar Jackson, Kyler Murray, like these contracts are still lingering, right? It's funny that's the deal that was made for Hollywood Brown, but I think in the summer we're going to really focus on, you know, those two deals. You're going to hear about, you know, the discontent on both sides about getting a long-term deal done, because if you're Lamar, I don't want to play a damn down without another contract, right? Like, I'll hold out like OTAs, all that stuff. Find me.
I do like the idea that the entire NFL is just like, screw you, Cleveland. Keep Baker Mayfield. You have to pay for him now, too. This is the cost of what you did. You have to keep Baker Mayfield on the roster and deal with these awkward practices and pay him a bunch of money to not play.
It's great. I mean, if you're Atlanta, right, you're like, look, I lost Matt Ryan over this. You can pay Baker. You can afford it.
So looking at the Arizona Cardinals in this trade, and I like Hollywood Brown as a player. Like, I think he is a good NFL wide receiver, and he did go on a run early in the season last year where he was like putting up like legitimate top 10 wide receiver numbers. But he's struggled with consistency. He's had a big problem with drops. Like, I don't view him as a wide receiver that should command like one of these top end contracts. Now, that's the cost of doing business right now, and somebody probably would give him that. But is Hollywood Brown really that different from Christian Kirk, like the wide receiver that they let walk and he got paid by the Jacksonville Jaguars? Like, I feel like you're just replacing Christian Kirk with Hollywood Brown, and I feel like they're kind of similar style players.
I like Hollywood speed a whole lot more. I think there's a lot more upside. I mean, Kirk, I wouldn't be surprised if Kirk never breaks 1,000 yards with the Jaguars, which like I think would be a surprise for, you know, Hollywood being there with Kyler Murray. That's just my general thought. But The Cliff Kingsbury stuff is hilarious. Like, he's just never not going to spend a crazy amount of money for a third wide receiver at this point, right? Like, it's going to be year after year. Once Nuke leaves, like, just assume they're trading up the draft for a wideout. A weird situation. I mean, these wide receivers flew off the board, too. I mean, it's probably one of the reasons why the Cardinals made the trade. When Jahan Dotson goes 16 and you have two trade ups at 11 and 12 for Chris Olave and Jameson Williams to be the third and fourth wide receivers off of the board, Tennessee takes Treylon Burks at 18. I kind of get why they had to like jump and make a decision, because they were sitting there at 23. A wide receiver wasn't going to be there for them to take, right? Like, once Burks went off the board, another wide receiver was not drafted in the first round. George Pickens, Christian Watson are still out there hanging out there, but apparently teams didn't think that they were first round picks.
I think that kind of matches like the narrative that we have been hearing recently. So that wasn't really surprising for me. I was surprised at the speed at which these wide receivers went off, but I think there was like, I think the NFL teams did a good job of recognizing like the tier break there. George Pickens, obviously coming back from a torn ACL, didn't look like the wide receiver one that he had been projected to be, you know, ahead of this draft. But, you know, George Pickens, if you guys have followed, you know, some of the narratives with, I think it was The Athletic that posted just anonymous comments from scouts, it sounds like people just weren't crazy about him, like as a person, as an interviewer. That was just sort of the vibe I got. So it kind of matches. And you know what? Christian Watson, fantastic athlete, but I do think that he's not a necessarily a full blown and developed wide receiver. He's a bit of a project. So I feel like the NFL did a great job in terms of distinguishing the tier break here between first round and second round projects.
The one surprise for me though was Dotson. Dotson going that high. I don't know if I had seen him mocked that high. I don't know if I had seen anyone with the opinion that he should be going that high. He was a guy that like you saw him in first rounds every once in a while, but it was like at the end of the first round. Like I saw him mocked to Green Bay at like 28 if there wasn't someone there at 22. Just I did not expect Burks and Dotson not being there at 22 for the Packers when they had a wide receiver need. I don't know if I would have turned in the pick for either one of those guys, but them not even being there is shocking to me. I'm actually kind of surprised those guys flew up so high off of the boards and Pickens isn't getting the look, Watson isn't getting the look.
Yeah, I don't really understand what's happening with George Pickens, because I think he's a stud and I desperately want the Chiefs to find a way to get him in round number two. But like Kate mentioned, there's these reports that teams just did not fall in love with him like during the interview process. So I'm not sure how much that is weighing, but it's just when you look at his career, like he does everything that you want a wide receiver to do in the NFL. Like he's a physical guy. He's an explosive guy. He likes blocking, which a lot of teams covet now for wide receivers. So I don't really understand the fall there, but we'll see where he goes on day two. I do want to talk about the Detroit Lions. They take Aiden Hutchinson, number two overall, and then they trade all the way back up to number 12 with the Minnesota Vikings to take Jameson Williams. I think that the Lions are moving in a good direction right now. And it's hard to like buy into that because it's the Lions. And normally I'm like, oh man, I love Jameson Williams and I wanted him to go to a good spot. And he wound up in Detroit. Now I feel bad for him, but I actually don't think it's a terrible spot. I feel like the Lions, for the first time in a really long time, are moving in a decent direction, and they've got a second round pick that they could still, you know, draft a quarterback if they want. They're at number 46. So there might still be a Desmond Ridder there or a Malik Willis if he continues to slide, if they want to take another quarterback and, you know, develop him behind Jared Goff this upcoming season. I like what the Detroit Lions did on day one of the draft.
And it's a pretty Detroit crazy Lions trade. Like if you look at that trade, they moved up 20 spots in the first round, and all they gave up was dropping down 12 spots in the second and giving up a third round pick. That's crazy for Jameson, who, if he was healthy, he would have been in. If Jameson was healthy, he might have been in the conversation for the first overall pick, right? Like, he could have been the first wide receiver drafted first overall since Keyshawn Johnson. I don't think that's a stretch. Like, he was the one guy who was able to produce against that Georgia defense that was a record breaker, and him going down in the national title swung that game. So I really like it for Detroit. I still kind of question, like, the whole, is Jared Goff going to start 17 games for you? Because you guys seem pretty not happy with him starting all those games last year. But they do still have that second round pick. We'll see if they use it on a guy like Malik or a guy like Ritter or even Sam Howell. Still some narratives to unfold on day two of the draft.
I think, though, that, like, let's give the Lions some credit. They started kind of moving in the right direction, I think, last year. Like, that was a much better team, you know, when you watched them play football, much better team than the final scores and their overall record of the 2021 season would have indicated. You just saw this team that really there was no point, you know, in their stretch of games there where teams could just kind of throw in the towel and say, okay, we're done, we're good. Like, they kept teams in the conversation to keep playing and keep, you know, they could never lax coverage, really. They could never just throw in the towel before the game was over, because this is a team that kept clawing their way back. Pardon the pun for Lions. Lions have claws, right? Yeah. Lions. Yeah. They kept clawing their way back in. And they, I don't know. They showed a lot of fight. I liked the leadership. You saw it in Dan Campbell with the biting kneecaps and all that stuff. Like, it seems like this team started moving in the right direction. And I think it just carried over into this draft. On the Jared Goff note, though, like, I obviously the Rams weren't committed to him as a long-term option after they gave him a big contract. But let's not forget that they did give him this very lucrative contract at the point where Jared Goff actually got paid. They thought for a moment that he could be their next guy. I think if you give, you know, Jared Goff some more weapons and, you know, even looking at like the players he had around him last year, did not have a suitable wide receiver court. TJ Hawkinson was not healthy. DeAndre Swift, not healthy. Get him a healthy receiving core and add Jameson Williams into that mix, and I think we could be looking at maybe a different Jared Goff, but maybe.
Yeah, I think the Lions offense is kind of intriguing for fantasy football. Like, yeah,
James, I love that you can't say any of this without a giggle. Like, everything has had like a tone of a giggle. Well, every time you say the Lions.
One of my rules in fantasy football when drafting my teams is just no Lions. And it works out for me, usually. At least it has pretty much my entire fantasy football life. But TJ Hawkinson is a guy with a lot of upside. And Amon-Ra St. Brown coming into his second year is a guy that's got some upside. Once Jameson Williams is healthy and on the field, he's got a lot of upside as a rookie. And I love DeAndre Swift. Like, all of a sudden, this Lions team is a little intriguing. So, excited to see where they go. I want to talk about the New Orleans Saints because they kind of started the trade chaos, right? Like, we saw Drake London go number 8 overall to the Falcons, then the Jets, who have been trying to get a wide receiver, take Garrett Wilson number 10 overall. And the Saints said, we can't wait anymore. Chris Olave, I would have to imagine, was their number 1 wide receiver on the board. And they said, we got to move up and get him. And they did. I think it's a good move. I think Chris Olave is going to be a really good player for them. And I'm excited to see, like, what Jameis Winston looks like with some weapons. We talked about Michael Thomas a little bit last night. We just have no idea what they still have in Michael Thomas. And so I'm curious to see how that's all going to work. But I'm intrigued by that now. It's, you have to feel a lot better about their pass catchers than you did going into the draft.
Chris Olave on turf. I mean, that's going to be a sight to see for the next, you know, 8 years or something. I was kind of surprised Washington was willing to move down, though, from 11. I mean, if they were going to take a wide receiver, yeah, I understand you're trading back, you're getting the picks, all that stuff. But the difference between Chris Olave and, to me, Jahan Dotson, like, I would have just taken Chris Olave at 11. I don't know why you have to trade back for Dotson. So I don't know. I think the Saints got the best of Washington there.
Yeah, I'm not really sure why Washington did it. But yeah, to me, it says the Saints were like, we feel like a wide receiver run is coming and we got to go up and get our guy.
Well, you know, they can't help themselves, right? Like that's yeah. always been the thing with the Saints. So I'm not shocked that they went up and grabbed Chris Olave. The thing I wasn't expecting is the Lions moving up right after them at 12, right? So like who would have expected the Lions to jump 20 spots for a wide receiver? I mean, if anything, people probably would have guessed like Malik Willis or something like that, a quarterback.
And why yeah. wouldn't they have moved up in that spot, though? Just as you mentioned, like the compensation to move that far up the board, just no-brainer, like absolute yeah. no-brainer.
I would have moved up for that price. I can't believe it. Like, what's his, the Vikings general manager, right? He's supposed to be Ivy League, analytics, all this stuff. And you kind of got swindled, bud. Like, Jameson Williams isn't a normal 12th overall pick. Like, I don't know if the draft board is the data points are necessarily showing like what this type of move is.
But I feel like this was the kind of trade that like the entire league saw. And like, as soon as they saw the terms, they're like, man, I would have done that. Like,
yeah,
that fantasy trade, like that goes down in your league and you're just like, oh my God, like I could have had player X for literally nothing. And I just didn't even think to ask. Like the Lions were that team that was like, hey, I'll toss you a couple of niblets for the best wide receiver in the class. And somehow they bought. So good for them. Like, good for them.
I feel the same way about the AJ Brown trade, too. I'm like, I would have done that. Like, if you need a wide receiver, I would have done that.
The Cardinals had to have been like, damn it. What? Why? We've been working on this Hollywood Brown trade for weeks. They finally agree to it, and then A.J. Brown gets shipped, and we're just sitting here like, damn.
I feel like the Cardinals must have been like, damn it. Like, there were so many – or the Jaguars must have been like, oh, my God. Like, what were we doing? We could have had A.J. Brown. Instead, we gave Christian Kirk the keys to our franchise. Like, what were we thinking? It's just it is. I guess you never know until you ask. That's the lesson here.
So I think this is a sign that the Lions are moving in the right direction, right? Because what we were hearing kind of going into the draft was that there were a lot of teams interested in trading into the top 10 possibly, but it seemed like the asking price to get into the top 10 was way too much. And so the smart team said, okay, well, once we get outside of the top 10, we think that we can get value the rest of the way in the first round by moving up. And so we saw a ton of trades after that, and it was all by organizations that, for the most part, I deem to be like smarter organizations who found value in trading up to get the players that they wanted. And the Lions were just one of those teams last night. It was just really surprising. But let's take a quick time out right here, and when we get back, we will get into some more of our winners and losers from day one of the NFL draft, as well as some of the best available players on day two, and that definitely includes the New York Jets and the New York Giants. That's coming up next on NFL Reacts.
Listen, I'm 24 and I still live at home. Like, what? For sure. Are you kidding me? My man and I, we attempted to move out.
Yeah, that'll be $1,600 for a studio apartment, not including groceries.
Last fall, the National Association of Realtors released data showing that housing affordability had fallen to its lowest point since the 1980s for reasons of economy, American.
There just aren't a lot of home sales going on. And there's really kind of a standoff right now between buyers and sellers.
That standoff leads to another kind of standoff.
It's always fun being 40-something years old and having to live with your parents again. And I know it's all my fault.
Sir, I don't know your life, but on Today Explained, a two-part series on how it might not be your fault. Our housing reality bites and the American dream is in your childhood bedroom. Series sponsored by Mint Mobile. Today Explained, in your feed every weekday.
And I'll tell my mom, Mom, I'm going to the bathroom, I'll be back. If I'm not out in like 3 minutes, dog, she's like knocking on the door going, everything okay in there? Yeah, Mom, everything's cool, dog.
it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
Welcome back into NFL Reacts. I'm Steven Serta of Arrowhead Pride, joined as always by Kate Madjuk of DK Nation, as well as Justice Mosqueda of Acme Packing Co. Talking nothing but NFL draft, day one in the books. We've already talked a ton about all the trades and the moves that we liked and the ones that we were kind of scratching our heads about. But let's talk about some teams that we came away impressed with a little bit more after day one of the NFL draft. I think the New York Jets absolutely crushed this thing. Like, I think that it could not have fallen better for them. And then I really thought when the Chiefs decided to trade up to 21, it was to take Jermaine Johnson, and they didn't. They took cornerback Trent McDuffie. And so they're able to get back into the first round at number 26 and get Jermaine Johnson, who was a guy that was getting all kinds of like draft hype to climb into the top 10 and then is available late first round. I think the Jets really, really had a good night in night one of the NFL draft.
I think the Jets probably would have been considering Johnson at four. So for him just to fall back into their laps, they definitely had a great night. I think my like biggest winner, and as a Steelers fan, I hate to say it, but I'm going with the Ravens, despite the fact that, yes, they trade away Hollywood Brown. They didn't go with a wide receiver in the first round, but I mean, they got truly just absolute dominant value in the first round of the draft. And I think, you know, the fact that they had that flexibility and they, I don't know, I think like Kyle Hamilton at 14, like that is a bizarre turn of events for me. And they get a pick that, you know, easily could have gone, I don't know what, top six, like at 14 falling into their laps. Like that was a team that I think took advantage of the best players available on the board. And they crushed it.
Yeah. I mean, Ravens, also the Linderbaum pick. I really like Linderbaum at 25 for them.
Lamar didn't, but I like it too.
Yeah.
I was puzzled by Lamar's reaction, and because you know, like a good center that can be, you know, a center part of a literal center part of your offensive line. And like, as a quarterback, you need a good center. You need a center that you have a rapport with and that you can count on and rely on. And I was kind of just puzzled overall by that reaction. And I don't know if you guys have any more insight. Is it just the fact that he wanted a wide receiver? Because I don't think there are any that I would have wanted to see come off the board right there specifically.
Yeah, if your team wasn't in on Pickens, I don't understand why anyone would have been begging for someone to draft after Burks went, right? So I don't know. The other team I would bring up, the Eagles. We haven't touched on them yet in this part of the podcast, at least, but cannot understate like AJ Brown, Jordan Davis. Like, hey, that's a good draft in and of itself, and you still have some more picks to make. So I like that. The Giants are interesting too. I mean, Kayvon Thibodeau, Evan Neal, those are two guys that had been rumored to be number one overall picks at different points in this draft cycle, right? And you get them at 5 and 7. I mean, talking about a rebuilding team, you get two guys in the trenches who are hopefully, you know, going to impact your franchise for the next 10 years. I mean, it's hard to have a better draft than that.
So I agree. I think the Giants also had a very good day. I do want to talk about Kyle Hamilton for another second, because we kind of glossed over that when we were talking about the Ravens trades and stuff like that. That is such a Baltimore Ravens pick, and he is such a perfect fit. Like, he is going to be a day one playmaker for the Baltimore Ravens. I love that pick. I can't believe they got him at 14. Like, that, the Ravens were just like, yes, that is everything we want in the world. Like, that
run it
is
to the podium.
Guy. Yes. I can't believe they got it. It's just, Baltimore's just a good organization, and they always seem to like get those guys that wind up being cornerstones in the spots that they're that you're supposed to draft those guys, and then they always seem to find help later in the draft too. Like, they're just a good organization. That Kyle Hamilton pick was absolutely fantastic.
It's very funny that the Eagles were like, we have to jump Baltimore for Jordan Davis. We can't let him get Jordan Davis, and then they get Kyle Hamilton, and we're reacting the same way. It's like, oh, they did it again.
Yeah, I love what they did there. And the Giants, yeah, it's new regime. It seems like the Giants are moving in a really good direction, and I was kind of hoping Kayvon Thibodeau was going to slide a little bit more because of all the rumors we were hearing of, you know, Jay Glazer was saying the Chiefs were even offering up next year's first round pick to like get up high and get an edge rusher. And he wound up not even falling past number five. And that's, I don't think he should have fallen past number five. Like, that is another guy that I think you're like, wait, the best edge rusher is still available at number five. Okay. Our pick is in. Let's go. Let's roll.
So the Giants got to be feeling like, hey, we picked like first overall twice. Right? Like, as far as we talked about this, as far as losers, how do you guys feel? Because I have two that kind of stand out at the top of the draft. Because it's funny, you know, Kyle Hamilton, Jordan Davis, Jameson Williams, Chris Olave. We're talking about all these guys. That's the tail end of the run of kind of the first half, right? Like the top 14. And then I feel like there's a huge tier drop after that top 14. We stopped seeing all these teams trading up, and we're getting back down to the teams that traded down. 15-16, Kenyon Green, guard, Texas A&M for the Houston Texans. That seemed so high. I mean, that was a guy that, like, people talked about with the Dallas Cowboys maybe in the first round. And then Jahan Dotson, who, again, we mentioned earlier in this this podcast, getting drafted at 16, which is, like, maybe 10 picks higher than I had seen him get drafted in like, any mock draft, so... Those are the two big ones that I'm like, I don't know. The Houston Texans too, by the way. The reason no one had them taking a corner and they went Derek Stingley third overall is because Lovie Smith is old school. Like, we would just run spot drop zone. They drafted a man corner, and it's Sauce Gardner's kind of in the same situation with the Jets and Salah, who obviously is going to run a bunch of cover three and stuff for them. So I don't really get why these corners went off the board so high to these specific teams. Like, they're good players. It feels like, remember when Lovie Smith had Daryl Revis in Tampa and everyone was like, why are you using him like that? Feels like these two guys are going to be pigeonholed in those kind of situations.
Daryl Revis was in Tampa, like, signed a big contract and had like the worst season of his career, and that he went on to win a Super Bowl after that. It was still absolutely
it was incredible. Like, oh, he was misused. They did not use Revis in the way you should use Revis. Like, that's how I feel about Stingley and Gardner right now.
Yeah, I think I really agree with you on the Texans. I just didn't love what they were doing. And, you know, for a team that I'm not really sure if they know what direction they're moving in right now, or where this thing goes from here, because they just have so many holes on the roster. I don't trust Davis Mills, even if they really like him. Like, I just don't know where they're really headed as an organization. But I think one of my biggest losers, and I'm sorry, Kate, is the Pittsburgh Steelers taking Kenny Pickett at number 20 overall, which I was just absolutely shocked by. Like, I was expecting. I expected them to take a quarterback, but when they legitimately had their pick of any quarterback on the board, I was like, you got to run to the podium with Malik Willis here. Or we talked about Desmond Ridder going to them on the show a couple of weeks ago, and I thought that was a really good fit for the Pittsburgh Steelers, but they decide to go with Kenny Pickett, and I was just like, wow. That was not the guy I thought they were going to take there.
No, it's still hard to talk about, guys. I'm
the wounds are fresh.
I'm really disappointed, especially with the fact that if we did not having our pick and our choosing of any of these quarterbacks, and then still pivoting back to pivoting away from Malik Willis, it seems absolutely insane to me. Like, I figured they would absolutely roll with Kenny Pickett if Malik Willis had been drafted first, and you know, obviously there's a comfort level there with Kenny Pickett. They know him, they know his play style. That's all great. You don't know how he's going to play with those teeny tiny hands in the dead of winter. Like everybody says, we've already seen him play in Pittsburgh. No, you haven't. Because if anybody's been in Pittsburgh, and trust me, I lived Pittsburgh winters for several years and they're brutal. The worst part of winters are like December, January, February. And that's not what Kenny Pickett has played with. We've already seen fumble issues at the collegiate level. Give him a bigger ball. I'm not buying the fact that his hand got bigger with, you know, between the combine. I'm not gonna roll with that. If Kenny Pickett hits, and like there is absolutely the potential for me to be wrong, like you just have to be banking on so many things to be outliers when you're looking at his NFL draft profile. And when I put, you know, contingencies and I start listing out all of these contingencies, like, well, for him, you know, he's going to have to be the outlier in this category. He'll have to be the outlier in that category, in this category. Like once I start putting all of those contingencies on the pick, I start to wonder, is this the right pick? And the Steelers blew it. They went with, I think, a guy that, you know, probably has a much safer floor maybe than Malik Willis, but I think the ceiling is so much lower. And I literally had tears in my eyes, and I'm not exaggerating. So
Steven and I were fielding questions from, or comments, really. I mean, it wasn't questions, from Steelers fans during the Twitter spaces that we had. And they're bringing up Bubby Brister, all sorts of stuff. There was a lot of heated arguments about if Bubby Brister was part of the dark years of Steelers quarterbacking. People were saying like, hey, my dad got to live through the dark years of Steelers quarterbacking. I'm happy I get my turn so I can have my war wounds and tell my kids. It was a tough situation. Doesn't seem like Steelers fans are rooting for the hometown kid. Someone said, like, is this the makeup for passing on Dan Marino? Like,
that's literally all I heard is you know, like that was the narrative on Twitter all night long, is that this was like a fear pick, let's not make the same mistake twice kind of pick. And any pick made out of fear is like a no-go for me. I just think the Steelers had an opportunity to kind of hit the reset button, and instead they went with a guy that I don't know. It's kind of interesting because I think obviously you see a lot of positive qualities with Kenny Pickett, but you know, he's a very late bloomer. The small hands, all of these things together point to concerns. Like this dude needed to play with two gloves at the collegiate level with a smaller ball, like, and already had fumbling issues with the two gloves and a smaller ball. Like, is anybody not like, I get everybody wants to say the hands thing shouldn't matter that much, but like my go-to thing is like, did X quality affect the play of this particular player at the collegiate level? Like sometimes when we look at wide receivers, if we're considering, you know, like lack of speed, I'm like, well, did lack of speed mess with their tape? And did they look slow on tape? If the answer is no and it didn't affect their game, then like disregard it. But Kenny Pickett's hands are small, and yes, it absolutely affected his play at the collegiate level. So yeah, I'm going to be concerned because there was already a fumbling problem.
Do you think Trubisky starts the entire season? Can Pickett beat out Trubisky?
I think that just the Steelers as an emotional, like I feel like the Steelers are one of the most emotional kind of teams. Like I don't know if everybody feels that way, but I think the Steelers get very emotionally involved with their organization, which is like a good thing. Because you're looking at the players as people. That's fantastic. But sometimes I think they make emotional decisions. And on that basis, I do think that they're going to give Kenny Pickett a shot. Do I want to see Kenny Pickett in year one? No, I'd like to see what Mitch Trubisky can offer. Because I do think that, like, we've already seen some special things from Mitch Trubisky, albeit on an inconsistent basis. But I think Kenny Pickett sees the field. Like I would put the over under at like 8.5 weeks, and I'd probably take the under, honestly, just knowing the Steelers.
Yeah. It's just curious based on kind of process of quarterback evaluation and the way it has kind of changed over the last several years, where we're seeing a lot more teams take chances on guys with just high athletic profiles and saying like, we can develop this guy because he's got the tools, he's got the arm, he's got the speed, he's got all of that stuff. We can develop him into an NFL passer because he's got the gifts. He just needs to be molded a little bit. Kenny Pickett just doesn't scream any of that to me. Like Malik Willis is that guy, and I think Desmond Ridder can be that guy. Kenny Pickett, it just isn't that guy, in my opinion. So I think it's a questionable pick by the Pittsburgh Steelers, but we'll see how it works. One more questionable pick before we get to some of our favorite players left on day two of the NFL draft. New England Patriots shocked the world by taking Cole Strange at number 29. And if you guys haven't seen it, there's a clip of Rams head coach Sean McVay and general manager Les Snead reacting to the pick and saying, oh, we thought that guy was going to be available at number 104. What a waste of time. And Bill just said, nope, I don't care. I'm taking him at number 29, even though we had a perfectly serviceable guard that we shipped to the Tampa Bay Buccaneers for basically free.
He was a guy that was being mocked, you know, maybe second, third round range, you know, kind of middle day two. I did not like him when I watched the film. And yes, I'm the sick bastard who watched UT Chattanooga film on all 22 because he fit the Packers kind of like offensive line thresholds. One of the funnier things I saw on Twitter all day, Tim O'Risky, I believe is how you say his name, PFF Moo on Twitter. He says, two Patriots users picked Cole Strange in the first round of the PFF mock draft simulator. Patriots fans had a total of 783,000 mock drafts. He posted one of them, one of the two of the 783,000 mock drafts that actually selected Cole Strange in the first round. And it was a mock draft in which someone used or controlled all 32 teams in the NFL, and they only drafted white players. So to say that this was an unexpected pick is a little bit underrated. But I will say the Strange 69 jerseys going to go out and fly like hotcakes in the New England area. It seems like that's a perfect fit.
It would be fantastic if that's just like their number one selling jersey next season.
Like, I mean, they drafted a full like full cage face mask offensive lineman in the first round of this draft. That's crazy. It's 2022. Okay. I thought we stopped making those guys.
Oh yeah, he's gonna be a fan favorite quick, I bet. And I actually lied before we get to our favorite players left on day two. I got to ask you, Justice, about the Packers and not selecting a wide receiver in round one. Do you still feel good about the players that they added, or do you kind of view their round one as a loser since they just chose, hey, we're still not going to draft wide receivers in round one. We just refuse to.
No, I mean, if the asking price for one of these wide receivers is a first and a third, you could trade a future first and a third after the draft for one of these guys, right? Like the Deebo Samuel situation hasn't been figured out. We'll see what happens with DK Metcalf. We'll see what happens with Terry McLaurin. But like where they were drafting, there wasn't a wide receiver for them to take at 22 if they didn't feel Jordan Pickens was or George Pickens was going to be a first round pick, right? So what else did you want him to do? You wanted him to draft Christian Watson at 22? That was my nightmare this entire offseason. I'm not advocating for that. So when these wide receivers flew off of the board at, you know, 10, 11, 12, that's when I knew, like, there's just no way Green Bay's going to trade up for one of these guys. You might as well pivot to another position. And they grabbed my favorite linebacker in the draft in Quay Walker. Devontae Wyatt has off-field stuff that's pretty disappointing. But, like, as far as him as a defensive lineman, I don't think there's many left in this draft. Like, Logan Hall is probably the only other guy I think can come in and contribute day one as an interior guy. So, like, I get it. I mean, their defense is going to be monstrous moving forward.
Yeah, and I agree with you. I don't think that there was a wide receiver left, and it might have been Treylon Burks if he didn't go number 18 to the Titans, who had just shipped A.J. Brown to Philadelphia. So it was like,
I'm more bummed they weren't involved in the A.J. Brown trade than I am that they didn't pick a wide receiver in the first round, right? Because that's the one where, again, we say, like, hey, I would have done that, or like, even, you know, depending on what the Vikings situation was, like if they would have given up so little for the Packers to move up to like 12 or whatever, like that's something I would have done. But for them not to pick one at 22 or 28, like, I get it. Like the board was decimated. Wide receivers are, the stock is going up.
Yeah. If I was the Kansas City Chiefs, I knew AJ Brown was available, I would have been like, I'll give you a first round pick, I'll give you a second round pick, I'll give you a third round pick. Like,
would you have given up both first for AJ?
I wouldn't have wanted to. I would have tried not to, but I probably would, because AJ Brown, I think, is just that special of a player.
You'd be easily convinced. Yeah. I mean, Devontae was what, a whole contract older, and the Packers got a first and a second. So like, you'd think that they would get more than that back. Like, I don't know. I probably would have given up 22 and 28, or yeah. So yeah. I don't know. More disappointed in that than them not going wide receiver in the first round. They'll be fine. They'll draft like Tyquan Thornton or something today.
Yeah. And I still think there's some wide receivers on the board who definitely have some upside here in the second and third round tonight. But let's get into some of our players that we like that are still available. And the Tampa Bay Buccaneers have the first round pick, number 30, or second round pick, number 33 overall. Hear me out here. Would it be absolutely crazy for them to just take Malik Willis and have him sit behind Tom Brady for a year? Like, is that not intriguing? I think they should do it. They've got a good roster. They've got some minor needs, and they could add some depth and stuff like that. So they don't necessarily need a quarterback who's going to sit behind Tom Brady, but based on like the Tom Brady Dolphins rumors, we have no idea if Tom Brady's going to play another season in Tampa. So why not plan for the future in a super high upside athletic quarterback who fell out of the first round?
Yeah, I think actually that's not a pick that I had slated them for to open up the second round, but man, you like sold me literally right off the bat here, Steven. That would be super fun. And I think honestly, what a great insurance policy for the Bucks in general for this year, as Tom Brady is presumably in his last season. Say that every year. But I mean, that's such a great move, because you're getting a first round prospect who, you know, obviously the Steelers passed on voluntarily. I'm not going to get back into that. But you're getting a guy that most people had pegged for the first round. Obviously, it's a weak quarterback class, but you spend a year with him learning behind Tom Brady. You know, I think, you know, the arm is probably the biggest question mark there. And like, can you, you know, not the arm strength, but just maybe like, how well can he make the throws? Like, learn behind Tom Brady for a year. And then you've got the rushing upside to tap into. You've got the development as an NFL quarterback behind one of the best quarterbacks to ever play the game. I think that would just be a win-win for everybody. But imagine if you get your future franchise quarterback in with the first pick in the second round. You're going to be pretty happy about that.
Wow. How little confidence we have in Kyle Trask. Wow. Wow. No, I mean, I think it makes a lot of sense, depending on how the direction of the team is going to be moving forward, and like, is Tom Brady part of their long-term plans and stuff like that. There's a lot of talent out here, though. Like, I know everyone's going to talk about David Ojabo because he's a guy that, like, you know, potentially could have been a top 10 pick before he tore his Achilles tendon at Michigan's pro day. He's an edge rusher, but there's other guys. I mean, Boye Mafe from Minnesota, Arnold Ebiketie from Penn State, Josh Paschal from Kentucky, Drake Jackson from USC. There's like a quietly great amount of edge rushers that are usually not available on round two. Logan Hall, kind of a hybrid interior defensive lineman, edge rusher. We've talked about George Pickens, guys like Jalen Petrie, the safety out of Baylor, who's going to be a great slot moving forward. Chad Muma, the linebacker from Wyoming. Every tight end is still on the board. There's a lot of talent still there on day two. And I think there's still that tier that was at the end of the first round, right? That tier is still continuing through now, I think, is the way to see it. Like, there's probably going to be another 15 picks before we see that tier drop of those second guys like we saw between picks 14 and 15 in the first round.
Yeah, I think there's still a ton of talent left on the board. We've talked about George Pickens a ton. I think George Pickens is going to be a stud, and I think he could be a steal in the second round. I think N'Kobe Dean has a chance to be a huge steal in the second round. I was really surprised he didn't manage to go in the first round, because I think he's a really talented linebacker who can be a day one, like, impact player. And
I think with Dean, the interesting thing is, like, it's really a fit thing, right? Like, he's a smaller linebacker. It is what it is. But, like, you need to have someone who is going to scheme up a lot of, like, stunts and blitzes for him to really maximize what he does. So, like, maybe Wink, right? Wink Martindale, the Giants defensive coordinator, is a guy who, like, takes a look at him. It's all those Baltimore guys. It's like the Chiefs, right? Like, Spags would go crazy with him. He doesn't fit everyone, but I think the teams that, like, he does fit with will value him a lot, right? So I think the fact that everyone isn't in the N'Kobe Dean market probably hurt him, but he's going to find some landing spot that's going to be nice for him today.
Yeah, if the Chiefs manage to draft him, Chiefs fans will not love it because they already have two young linebackers on the roster. But I would be excited for that move.
Admitting mistakes is never fun, right? Admitting mistakes is never fun.
You mentioned David Ojabo. I really like David Ojabo. He's another guy that, you know, he's probably not going to play next season because of the torn Achilles, unfortunately. But he's a guy that if you can hold out hope that he comes back the following year and is a high impact player, I think he could wind up being a steal. I like Arnold Ebiketie a lot too, as you already mentioned. And there's a lot of wide receivers that I still like. I like Sky Moore a ton. I like Christian Watson in the second round. I just didn't like Christian Watson in the first round. So I think there's value there. I'm also curious about John Mechie and where he's going to go and how teams kind of view him, because I think he could be an impact wide receiver that's still available and somebody could wind up getting a steal in like the third round in him.
Yeah, I mean, the injury didn't help him at all during this process, and the fact that so many of these wide receivers ran crazy numbers. The other guy I'll mention, Tyquan Thornton, I think he's going to go today. I mean, high flyer, like Olympic speed, legitimately runs right by DBs in the Big 12 on nice surfaces, right? Like turf, sun, clear days, all that stuff. He's a guy I wouldn't be surprised if he sneaks into the second round even. And some people might be surprised by that, but I think that's what it is. The tight end run is probably going to start in round three. I'm talking about like the non-Trey McBride guys. Like Trey McBride is in a tier of himself, I think, in NFL evaluators. But I think we're going to see guys like Kate Outen, Jeremy Ruckert, Jelani Woods, Greg Dulcich from UCLA. All those guys are probably going to go round three.
I'm also ready for the run on running backs to happen tonight, because I am ready to start updating my dynasty rankings and start preparing for my dynasty fantasy football draft. So I'm excited to see where Breece Hall goes.
Do you like Spiller? Walker.
No.
Do I like Spiller?
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I think that if he lands in a good spot, I think he can be an impact player, but I would much rather have Breece Hall or Kenneth Walker. Like
Kate said no, which is kind of how I feel. I watch Spiller and I'm like, I just don't get it. I really don't get it. I don't understand why you need to take this guy before like the fifth round. Like,
yeah, I look at a guy like I don't think there's anything that just like pops off the page when I'm watching Isaiah Spiller. There are question marks about like Kenneth Walker and his receiving ability. Like, I have much more questions about Isaiah Spiller's receiving ability. I would much more, like if my team were in the running back market, I'd prefer to look at a guy like Damian Pierce, who, you know, shows, I think, all of the traits that you want. And I think the, you know, only big question for him would be, can he sustain a full workload? And like, so I think I would much rather go with a guy that I think shows some more extraordinary traits than Isaiah Spiller does. Like there's just nothing he's like superb at. Right. I don't really get the hype there. And I think there's just such a massive tier break there between like a Kenneth Walker and Isaiah Spiller. And I don't think people are really recognizing that tier break for what it is, because for me, it's massive.
I'm going to admit something. I'm a James Cook guy.
I love James Cook. Love James Cook. I'm very excited for James Cook as well. Like, give me James Cook. Give me Dameon Pierce. Give me all these guys over Isaiah Spiller. What am I missing, Steven?
I don't know. I just think that he's another player that, in the right situation, I don't view him as like an RB1 like I do like Breece Hall or Kenneth Walker. Like, because Kenneth Walker, I think, is like, he's that type of running back that I like. Like feed him carries and let him break tackles and like do what he does. Like Isaiah Spiller, I just kind of look at him as like more of like a situational running back that could have an impact if he lands in the right situation. But I don't think he needs to go like tonight. I don't know if he's going to get drafted in round 2 or 3.
James Cook, all James Cook did was every single time Georgia played a big game, caught a 50-yard reception. I like that in a running back. Like, give me the discount running back who could be explosive in the passing game for me. Okay, that's fine. I understand he shared carries. Everyone shares carries at Georgia. Nick Chubb shared carries at Georgia. I'm cool with it.
Yeah. I'm on board with that. But there's still plenty of talent in the NFL draft coming up tonight. We got rounds 2 and 3. Make sure you stay locked in right here on the SB Nation NFL show. We've got coverage for you guys all weekend, and we'll have plenty of coverage wrapping up everything and getting prepared for the full off season starting on Monday. So make sure you're locked in right here, and please make sure you subscribe, rate, and review everything that we're doing on Apple and Spotify. You can follow Kate on Twitter at FFBallBlast. You can follow Justice at JUMOSQ. I'm Steven Serta. That's where you can find me. We will talk to you guys soon.